Good morning, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where it is you're zooming in from. It's Mindfulness Without Borders. It's good to be here. My name is Ali, and I am your facilitator today, stepping in for Marv. I've been here a number of times, so some of you are returning. Someone is having trouble hearing me. Let's see. I'll turn my volume up, but you may also need to turn your volume up. So, yeah. So welcome. I am a UCLA certified mindfulness facilitator and teach MAPS classes associated with UCLA Mark for a number of years. So happy to be here teaching on behalf of Marv. And yeah, hello from Brazil. Fantastic. Feel free to put in the chat where you're zooming in from so we get a sense of the global community that we're all in. It's beautiful. Minnesota, Arizona, Scottsdale, all right, South Florida, Portugal, beautiful, Los Angeles, Hollywood, weird, Texas, yeah, let's just Japan, just go ahead and check in to see the world of Monday, 12:30 Pacific time mindfulness in the community that's here. And if you wish, put your cameras on. And if, oh, Jody, it's good to see Jody Johnson. Yeah. And so many friends who I've practiced with before. Hillary, welcome from England. Yeah, beautiful to see you. All right. So, let me just also introduce or in the background acknowledge Ronnie from UCLA, who is making sure that our technology is working and everybody is able to participate. So thank you. What I wanted to begin with is a little bit of the science of mindfulness, particularly around the work of Killingsworth, the Harvard psychologist, and just to touch on the why of the practice of mindfulness, and then we'll do a series of mindfulness practices. In his a study on happiness, and Killingsworth research pointed to the notion that about 50% of the time, 49.6% of the time, we're not in the present moment. We're engaged in what is referred to as mind wandering into the future, into the past, etc. But the mind wandering takes us away from the present moment. Of course, mind wandering is not bad because it's a source of creativity. It's a source of imagination. It's where vision comes into play, where we can construct a positive and hoped-for future for ourselves. But unfortunately, mind wandering is not always sweetness and light, to invoke Walter Benjamin, right? That one of the challenges of mind wandering is what psychologists, scientists refer to as the default network mode, right? That the default network of the mind, if it is left unchecked and if we're not skillful, can time travel into areas of fear, anxiety, worry, what-ifing, worried about the future, getting stuck in past and guilt, and comparing our insides with other people's outsides. And in that sense, mind wandering creates unhappiness, right? And what Killingsworth was able to demonstrate in his study is that if we are in the present moment, if we can use our agency to redirect the mind's wandering attention, wandering proclivity into the present moment, we're actually happier. And we can even in the present moment be happier if we're doing boring or repetitive tasks, right? So the skill we're developing in the practice of mindfulness is how to intentionally redirect our awareness, our attention into the present moment. Right? And one of the definitions of mindfulness, and by the way, when we do that, bringing our awareness or attention into the present moment, we don't just experience more happiness, but also more calm, more ease, more emotional regulation, less reactivity. We develop concentration, our capacity, cultivate our capacity to pay attention in what we are doing in the present moment. So one of the definitions of mindfulness is paying attention then to our present moment experience with curiosity, with interest, and with a willingness to be with what is. That willingness to be with what is suggestive of non-judgment, right? We allow, we accept what is happening in a way that is kind and non-judgmental, right? We allow it. This is the truth of my experience as it is right now. When we focus with on the present moment with curiosity and interest, we're really playing with the quality of our attention. Many of you may have already practiced, for example, with mindful eating or mindful eating with grapes. You know that the grape didn't change when we eat mindfully. What changed was the quality of our attention on the flavor, aroma, taste, texture of the grape. So we shifted our quality with interest and curiosity on the object of attention. And all of a sudden, the whole new world opens up. So what we're practicing then is this capacity to skillfully bring our awareness into the present moment and to be more skillful consumers of when mind wandering is useful, helpful, and when it gets us into areas of default network where we experience anxiety, fear, worry, guilt, et cetera, et cetera. So let's practice and invite you to, I'll guide us, invite you to close your eyes if you wish, find a comfortable way to sit so you're relaxed and not distracted. Yeah. I prefer to close my eyes, but you can leave your eyes open if that's more comfortable for you, as long as it's a soft, gentle gaze so you're not distracted. And one of the ways to come into the present moment is through what we call touch points. And bringing your awareness to your feet, noticing your feet on the floor. That's a touch point, noticing the way the heels touch, pressure, connection, the toes, balls of the feet. Notice that it was quite doable. We didn't have to work too hard. All we did was invite our awareness to our feet, invite our awareness to notice the sensations of our feet touching. Might notice texture, coolness. Perhaps we're barefoot on the carpet or tile or cushion. Might notice warmth, And as we do that, we're in the present moment. Didn't take much effort. We direct attention. And we do what the definition of mindfulness is. We purposely, on purpose, bring our attention to a present moment experience, feet on the floor. And we do so with curiosity. And the curiosity is what invites us to explore that touch point in a way that is more qualitative, more texture, more interested. Pressure, connection, texture of warmth, coolness, pull of gravity, sense of connection. And we can explore other touch points. So for instance, the touch point of our back touching the couch or the cushion or the chair. Or if there is nothing that we're leaning against, then just noticing that we have a back. Noticing pressure. Perhaps there's texture or softness. Interest, curiosity, present moment. We have other touch points, noticing our hands, where they're placed right now, maybe on lap, abdomen, cushion, armchair. Maybe they're laced together. Just noticing connection, pressure. Maybe there's pulsing in the fingers of the hand. Maybe there's coolness or warmth. These touch points are wonderful ways of coming back into the present moment because they're always in the present moment. All body sensations are in the present moment. Gently letting go of the touch points, bringing your awareness to sounds, noticing ambient sound. Again, noticing that it was doable, it's possible. We can invite awareness to move. In this case, we're getting interested and curious about sound. You don't have to listen to all the sounds, just sounds that come into awareness as we pay attention with interest and curiosity. Sounds near, above, below, beside, behind. Sounds far away. And as we pay attention to sound, again, being curious in a non-judgmental way, we're not thinking about sounds. We're interested in sound as if listening to an orchestra. High notes, low notes. Pulsing, moving. Might be silence between sounds. You might notice that. Sounds outside, inside our body. Sounds are always in the present moment. It's not in the future. It's now. It's happening right now, this moment. How do we know we're present? We're listening. Of course, attention might drift. It's what a default network does. It's a survival skill. It's a sign of intelligence. We're not doing anything wrong. At some point, we realize that the attention, our awareness, has drifted. not a problem. We do what we did with touch points. We intentionally re-invite our awareness back to sounds. It's a huge skill to know that we can change the channel on our experience on purpose. The mind has agency, but so does our awareness. So do we. So we bring it back to sounds. And as we listen to sounds, we might notice that some sounds have short lifespans, like a door closing, refrigerator door, something that's dropped. And some sounds have a longer lifespan, a motorcycle going by, an airplane going by, as a beginning, birth, middle, and end. A fan in the room has a very long lifespan. Earlier this morning, a neighbor was putting in a pool in the backyard, and the cement mixer was going for about 20, 30 minutes or so. It's a long lifespan, but even sounds that have long lifespans are constantly moving, shape-shifting. Low sounds, high sounds, sounds within sounds. Even an airplane going by is not one solid sound when we get curious. As you notice sounds, you might make a mental note that sounds don't need our permission to exist. They come and go on their own accord. It wouldn't be wise on my part to insist that a bird stop singing. That's what it does. So we listen with interest and curiosity to sounds. And if our awareness drifts, not a problem, bring it back to sound. Same is true when we bring awareness to breath. So invitation is to gently let go of breath, let go of sound. If you wish, you can stay with sound if you'd like, but if you wish to experiment and explore bringing your awareness to breath. And when we pay attention to our breath, noticing again, that was doable, that no matter where our mind might be at any given time, we can invite it to reframe itself, to bring our own awareness to something like breath. And we can notice breath at the abdomen, chest, or nostril. Call that home base. Sound was our home base. So breath is our home base. We can notice breath in the abdomen, chest, nostril. Here we're not thinking about breath. We're experiencing breath as a sensation. So if we choose the abdomen, rising, expanding of the abdomen with each inhale, falling, contracting with each exhale. Same with the chest. Same expansion with each inhale, contraction. Indeed, when we inhale by paying attention to our breath on chest, we might notice our back pressing against the chair or the couch. Right? Expanding, being curious, being interested. And if we use our nostril as the point of contact or our anchor, we might notice the coolness of air as it enters the breath, the nostril, and the warmth or perhaps slight vibration, subtle vibration as air leaves the nostril. So just picking one of these areas, it doesn't matter which you pick, they all work equally well in keeping us in the present moment. So don't try to figure out which is the best. They all work well. Bringing awareness to your breath. Sensations of breath. The reason we choose the sensations in the breath or body or sensations in the body or sound is that's how we know when our attention has drifted. So at some point, you'll probably realize that you're no longer on breath, abdomen, chest, or nostril. You're somewhere else. You're mind wandering. Exactly what Killingsworth's study showed. And his study, by the way, showed that 50% of the time we're not in the present. So you're in good company. If the mind wanders, it goes somewhere. Where it goes for the purposes of the practice is not really that interesting. What's interesting is noticing that we have drifted, noticing we've wandered. And when we do, we give it a gentle nod, an acknowledgement. We give it a label, thinking, wandering, planning. It doesn't have to be precise, just giving it a gentle label to acknowledge that we did nothing wrong. We allow it. We accept it. It's non-judgment. The mind is supposed to wander. That's its job. It's keeping us safe. And so we gently redirect it back to breath. And as we practice again and again, returning to breath, there might be a particular thought that grabs our attention. When we practice, sometimes thoughts are not sticky. They come and go. We notice them, we come back. We notice it, we come back to breath. But sometimes thoughts can get sticky, like they want to be thought, like it's urgent. When that happens, we do something quite important and odd. We don't try to force it away. We actually turn, let go of the breath and turn towards this thought. We acknowledge it. I see you. You want to be thought. I see you. I acknowledge you. But we don't have to stay there. What we can do is, I see you. You're thinking, you need to be thought. I'll come back to you in an hour. I'll come back to you in half an hour. Right now, though, let's both return to breath, abdomen, chest, nostril. That acknowledging, that turning towards is very skillful, so long as we don't stay there. And redirect ourselves with some effort. It does take effort back to breath. And the same is true for a particular sound. As we're focused on breath, a particular sound might grab our attention. Most sounds come and go. They don't really have a claim on our attention. They're not sticky. But sometimes a particular sound seems to want to be heard. And we do the same thing. We gently let go of breath, turn towards the sound, getting curious about it. And we're getting curious about the sound without the stories around the sound. Yeah. So a dog may be grabbing our attention. But we listen to the sound of barking, high notes, low notes. Maybe there's space between sounds, getting curious about the orchestra of a bark, rather than the stories the bark might be claiming on the awareness. Why is it the neighbor controlling the dog? Maybe I should go knock on the door. I need to say something. Those are the stories. Instead, we just listen to the bark. We don't stay there. We just give it some attention, awareness, acknowledgement. At some point, it might fade to the background, or it's still there, but it doesn't have the same hold. And then we gently return to breath. Inhale, exhale. It doesn't matter how many times we have to return to breath. We can always begin again. It's the beauty of the practice. Of course, all that we're doing is teaching ourselves, building the muscle capacity to return to what Killingsworth is pointing to, the present moment, where we're happier. More peace, more ease, more calm, less reactivity. And the more we practice formally, like we're doing now, the more the opportunity that when we're off the cushion, when we're living our lives, going about our day, doing whatever our lives require us to do, we increase the possibility that when we are dysregulated, when we are into the past and the future, where Killingsworth is suggesting we're not happy, right, because of the default network, we can notice, oh, I'm drifting again. Not necessary right now. I can come back. I can come back to the present moment, being curiosity to the present moment, whatever it is I'm doing. Breath, sound, body sensations. It's no minor skill. Just taking a deep, gentle, soft inhale, maybe to the count of four. An equally gentle, soft exhale, also to the count of four. Doing that one or two times on your own. Giving yourself some appreciation for carving time out of your day to practice and community, to be here, build skill. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. If your eyes are open, bring an end to this brief meditation. Thank you, everyone, for practicing and being here with me. It's delightful to be here. I will be teaching a MAPS class beginning November 8th. Ronnie will place that on your in the chat. And if you're interested, of course, there are other mindfulness teachers, including Diana Winston, who will be teaching MAPS classes, but invite you to check into the MAPS classes. And if you're interested to explore my own 6-week MAPS class, you're welcome to check in on that website as well. Thank you all for practicing, and Marv will be back next week. It was delightful to be with you.